sexualizing somebody like that is not using the same language that the eugenics professors that have powered white supremacy and fucking skull measuring are into. Like, this
we're never going to win an election again. This is what this rant is, like, empowering JD Vance. Hey, everybody, I'm Tim Miller.
I'm Cameron Caskey. And folks, two really huge things have happened in the past 24 hours. The Milwaukee Brewers handily defeated the Miami Marlins, and Donald Trump finally condemned his friend Jeffrey Epstein. Let's take a look.
People keep writing stories about the time he threw him out of Mar-a-Lago. Can you settle that? What was it about? What caused the breach with him?
That's such old history. Very easy to explain, but I don't want to waste your time by explaining it. But for years, I wouldn't talk to Jeffrey Epstein. I wouldn't talk because he did something that was inappropriate. He hired help. And I said, don't ever do that again. He stole people that worked for me. I said, don't ever do that again. He did it again. And I threw him out of the place, persona non grata. I threw him out, and that was it. I'm glad I did, if you want to know the truth.
Don't ever do that again, Cameron. Usually, ideally, if you're going to talk to Jeffrey Epstein and say, don't ever do that again about something, it would probably be fucking 13-year-old girls. It would probably be the thing that he should not do again, not hire the help from Mar-a-Lago.
Well, it's also just like he said the word inappropriate. He said Jeffrey Epstein did something inappropriate. Yeah. And, you know, when I hear Jeffrey, and this, you know, I happen to be, as we've repeatedly stated on this podcast, the wokest white man in Gen Z. So maybe this is just me being woke, but the woke side of me thinks that the most inappropriate thing Jeffrey Epstein did was rape children. So the use of the word inappropriate for poaching service staff is very Trump. You know, it's to be expected. The man is delivering everything that we could have expected from him. And that's called consistency. And how often do we get that from a politician?
He poached the help. You know, this is just a guy who cares about the working man, Cameron. This is the thing with Trump. You know, if you're a working class American, those Democrats, you know, they're elitist. They went to college. They look down their nose at the working man. You know,
many of these working class people get sent to El Salvador and Alligator Alcatraz now, which they probably wouldn't have during previous administrations.
Maybe, but they condescend. You know, they use highfalutin words and they look down on the culture of the working man. Not Donald Trump. He doesn't look down on the working man. He refers to them as the help. And if they choose on their own volition to take another job, that gets really upset because they're his property, actually, and he gets mad about that. But, you know, other than that.
And Trump values loyalty. I don't know anybody who hates a fake friend worse than Donald Trump. And while he might not acknowledge or respect the individual humanity of, quote, the help, I'm sure it didn't feel good for him to feel like he was losing friends. So unless they're Roy Cohn, of course, in which case he's happy to leave that guy behind. But interesting clip. We also had Donald Trump saying earlier today in a press conference or whatever that he did not have the privilege of going to Epstein Island, which is some way to put it. I think a lot of privileged people did go to Epstein Island.
He did not have the privilege to go.
Yeah, if he was caught on record saying that, you know, before the world knew it was a child rape island, I think he could have gone out. He could have just very easily said, like, yeah, it sounded like a great vacation spot. I didn't have the privilege to go. But no, he said that today.
I hear he's got a private beach, you know, you get to avail yourself of. And there's that weird temple. You know, it's not every day you get to see a weird temple on a billionaire's island, right? What else happens there? There's a swimming pool out here. It's
nice. I saw an interview with Blair White, the conservative voice who is probably the top most trusted source of news across the aisle right now, where an Epstein survivor was talking about there being science labs there and was saying that this is something that my friend from back home who was a Donald Trump fan, but Trump lost her when the Epstein stuff really started to boil up. In this Blair White interview, they talk about cloning and how there could have been cloning going on. And listen, I'm not saying there was cloning happening on Epstein Island. I am saying that they raised a really good point, which is that in the 90s, we figured out how to clone sheep. And it's like, do you think people were like, okay, great, let's stop there?
Yes.
Food for thought.
Food for thought. We should have your friend, that bailed on MAGA on the channel? Does she want to speak out? Does she want to come forward?
I don't know.
Does she want to have her story told?
We hooked up for a couple years. I think we've already had one ex of mine on the show. And while
I could do it though, I could interview
just her. Just a one-on-one interview with her.
Yeah, I don't know. Just try to explore her journey.
Yeah, it's a very interesting journey because she went from Republican but not Trump to Republican and Trump to Republican and I can't support Donald Trump anymore because the child rape is where he went too far. Which in all fairness, you know, I do think Donald Trump went too far like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But I'm glad she wasn't cool with the child rape. You know, you got to hand it to people. I think that we all need to take the opportunity to remind everybody that it's a big tent after this Epstein stuff. And I think that MAGA is going to lose a lot of people. And it's our responsibility as voices who communicate things from a more, you know, liberal perspective to say to everybody, hey, by the way, you know, we're the side where once it's proven that people in our party did child rape, we're actually going to kick them out and say go to prison.
Yeah. Even more than that, the Democrats kicked out Al Franken when he didn't do anything even close to child rape. And he just did some funny jokes, you know, a little bit of light harassment. Not great, not good. I don't endorse it. But I mean, nothing close to a child sex ring. And boom, he had to hit the curb. So, you know, accountability, there's an accountability gap.
I talked about this on MSNBC or as Tim is on an MS basis with it.
MS,
But I was talking about this when we were talking about the New York City mayoral race. I was like, so Cuomo is good. Cuomo is good to get endorsements from Bloomberg and from Jim Clyburn, the most perfect politician in the world who is above criticism. But Al Franken had to go. Cuomo, with 12 credible accusations of sexual harassment and having sued for gynecological records of his alleged victims, he's actually fine and the establishment will get behind him. But that son of a bitch, Al Franken, had some pictures where he was being in a props and we can't put up with that. Fuck all these people, whatever.
Accusements is kind of a fun malapropism, actually.
Well, it's because I was getting to the word harassment.
Yeah, harassment, accuser. That's fun. I've invited Andrew Cuomo onto the Bulwark and have not heard back. So I should say,
have you done
Andrew,
Franken yet?
Me and Al had a great chat last year. He's a good dude.
As a young Jew who thinks he's hilarious, Franken was like a superhero to me growing up. Franken, John Stewart, Anthony Bourdain, Robin Williams, and Norm Macdonald were my big ones growing up.
Oh, love Norm. That's a good list. Yeah, Al Franken's pod itself is kind of, you think our pod is chaotic? His pod is totally chaotic. He's just doing like random asides for like 3 minutes and loses track of what the topic was and stuff.
Does he have any
it's a journey.
Does he Gavin Newsom it and have any fucking Charlie Kirk types on?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. He's Al. You can't go wrong with Al, really. What else do we have? Speaking of staying on topic, Cameron, what else is on our what's on our agenda today?
Speaking of how funny I am,
yeah.
I've always said I wanted Al Franken to run for president with Jill Stein as his VP so we could have presidential election posters that say Frankenstein. And you can all leave a comment down below how fucking funny you think that is.
I've got great news for you. We can leave the Russian asset Jill Stein by the wayside now. The new Democratic governor of North Carolina is Josh Stein. So it can be an Al Franken, Josh Stein ticket. And you can still have your joke without having to give anything to one of the worst people in the world. Not quite as bad as Ghislaine Maxwell. But certainly in the top 250, Jill Stein.
Jill's pretty bad, isn't she? Jill's really bad. She even the whole, you know, the presidential ticket thing where she's just being such a terrible person to the Democratic Party. Even with all of that aside, she also sucks. Also, maybe Sam Stein. Sam Stein would be a good option. But
Franken Sam. That's a good one.
I want to get into 2 points of disagreement we've had this past week. Tim and I see eye to eye on plenty of things. And there's also obviously so many places where we're different. One of them was out of nowhere in the middle of a different conversation. I texted Tim, Blink 182 is so good. And he thumbs downed my message. I don't need to talk about it. I just wanted you all to know.
This is something people don't know about Cameron, which is kind of surprising because Cameron is a theater kid and he is so he's so creative. And I forget if the creative side of the brain is left brain or right brain, whichever one it is, that's Cameron. And, you know, he's young and has very hip friends, has dated prominent. So you would think that Cameron would have good taste in music. Wrong. Horrible taste in music. I mean, every suggestion he has is horrible. Like, it is the worst taste. Like, Cameron has the taste in music of like a, and maybe some of you are listening, so please don't take it the wrong way, 58-year-old lady from the boring part of New Jersey or connect, like Hartford, like a 58-year-old woman from Hartford. Who drinks two Starbucks mocha frappuccinos a day. Like, that person's Spotify playlist and Cameron's are indistinguishable.
In my defense, I love REM, and I think we can all get behind that.
We can. Okay, let's move on. Let's move forward.
The other point of disagreement we had was in regards to Sydney Sweeney, who has really emerged as a political figure without really trying to.
Yeah.
Sydney Sweeney was just trying to be an actor and a great businesswoman. She did a film called Madam Web, which was famously one of the worst superhero movies of all time. In order to get a rom-com she really wanted to do called Anyone But You, greenlit by Sony. So she made the choice to be in a really bad movie because that got the studio to greenlight a passion project for her. So she's
I like that. More That's kind more of how this just, podcast came into play, actually.
This pod, yeah. I don't remember how this podcast came
into play. Let's keep going.
She's all over the place. People talk about her online all the time. For those of you who don't know, Sydney Sweeney is a blonde actress who has given some phenomenal performances and some all right performances. She is famous for having huge tits, which
White Lotus season one epic.
Does she tits on White Lotus season one?
I don't know if we see them in toto, but she's wonderful.
She does on Euphoria. And she's really a talented person, but MAGA has kind of tried to take Sydney Sweeney and make her a little bit of an icon for them. And unfortunately, Sydney Sweeney seems to be not trying to avoid that. She seems to not necessarily mind. Basically, what happened was there were all these viral tweets that were showing Sydney Sweeney being hot and saying, woke is dead. Because according to these people, since left-wing individuals, woke-minded individuals want more diversity in projects, the very idea of being a hot blonde woman with big boobs is MAGA to them. It means that the America that they fought for came back. And that has turned into a couple things.
Well, before we get into our fight about Sydney Sweeney, can I ask, because you can represent the woke liberal male, are woke liberal males interested in blonde girls with big boobs? Is that a popular archetype or no?
I'm kind of over that. I have been there and it was an extraordinary journey for me.
I was talking to you for you to generalize among your peer set.
They fucking love Sydney Sweeney. I think Sydney Sweeney is so attractive and beautiful and more than that is a very smart person and there's a lot to respect about her. There's a couple things that I wasn't so excited about. She's selling a soap now that is apparently made out of her bath water, which, you know, there's a degree to which she's taking ownership of how sexualized she is. There's also a degree to which that's fucking weird. She was at Jeffrey Bezos' wedding.
You're sort of strangely at times anti-sexual and anti-touch. I don't know. If there's anything weird about that. I kind of like that. That's kind of hot.
I think bathwater soap is just a little weird because it's like, I think that there's a degree to which the men who want something like that, the thing they like about it is that Sydney doesn't know who they are, and they're still claiming some sort of ownership over her body.
You're making it kind of weird, but okay, I hear you. I mean, she chose to do it. All right, I do not endorse anyone going to Jeff Bezos's wedding. That's a bad idea. But before we go over our whole rap sheet, can we watch the ad we disagree with?
She did an advertisement for American Eagle that Tim is cool with. I think it's kind of eugenics. Let's have a look.
Genes are passed down from parents to offspring, often determining traits like hair color, personality, and even eye color. My jeans are blue.
Sydney Sweeney has her jeans.
Okay. I'd like for you to explain to me what your problem is with that advertisement.
Well, it's a remake of an ad that many would call pedophilic because it features a 15-year-old girl. I don't remember who it was in the ad. I kind of don't want to draw attention to it, but this was like a direct remake of a very predatory advertisement. But whatever. Okay. Making it with an adult woman. Blonde hair, blue eyes, talking about genes and how genes work and saying she has great genes. I think American Eagle recognized that conservative America, who wants this sort of white purity, loves that Sydney Sweeney represents what they're looking for, and therefore they're playing into that, not as a full-blown dog whistle, but as something that is definitely pretty eugenics, pretty like British
eugenics? Eugenics? Like what? Like this jeans ad is arguing for like killing the, you know, getting rid of people that have certain identifiable traits. And we do have genes. Genes exist. We all do have G-E-N-E-S genes, as well as most of us wear J-E-A-N-S genes. Like acknowledging their existence is not eugenics, I don't think. Is it the existence of genes?
Look, I am a staunch believer in the First Amendment, unlike the Anti-First Amendment League that calls themselves the ADL. But I will say that this was just, I mean, come the fuck on. You know what they're doing. Like, you can defend it.
She's hot. She's got blue eyes. They got blue jeans. She's got blue eyes. It's a play on the eyes and the jeans. It's like were the Calvin Klein commercials in the 90s eugenics? Like, there are plenty of ads that, like, touch all different kinds of different racial identities, talk about how they're beautiful. That's fine. I don't know. They're hot black people in advertisements that they sell, you know, that maybe sometimes you could say they're using them to try to sell to the black market. Like, isn't this just advertising? Like, what is wrong? Like, she's not saying that black people are bad or that brown eyed people are bad. It's a sultry, sexy, I mean, maybe you don't like sultry, sexy ads, but it's not eugenics, I don't think.
Yeah. Look, we can't watch every advertisement. You know, I have YouTube Premium.
I don't watch very many ads at all, actually.
I click out of ads very often, although you should listen to every ad that we do on FYPod.
Thank you to our sponsors.
But like, I don't think I can imagine an ad with like a dark skinned black woman that says she has good genes. Like, I can't picture that.
Beautiful ads. There are a lot of black is beautiful ads.
Like, yeah, but that's not genes. Genes is the composition of somebody's genetic makeup. You know, that is what makes you an Aryan, is your genes. And I find it, leave a comment down below for the algorithm if you've seen an ad saying that an Asian person has good genes.
Even if you're right, like, I don't think that
Trump
is
says
a good
that about
place.
People too, by the way. Trump's into jeans too.
It's an ad for blue jeans. I don't think that it's a good place for liberals or pro-democracy, whatever people want to describe themselves, progressives to be in. That, like, it is racist for a blonde girl to be able to say that she has good jeans. Like, I don't think that's a good place for people to be.
Some dude was saying it.
That creates backlash. Like, people think that Sydney Sweeney is hot and has good genes. Does anybody disagree with the fact that Sydney Sweeney has good genes? She's extremely hot and attractive. I mean, I think Michael B. Jordan has great genes. Would anybody deny that? I don't think so.
Nobody's making an advertisement saying Michael B. Jordan has good genes.
Well, not in this case, but there are plenty of ads that sexualize and like talk, and you know, and maybe that people don't like that, and that's bad. But like, it's not like there are not hot black and brown people in ads these days. If anything, the critique now is that there's like two, whatever. It's like two all ads. It's like every couple has to be biracial. I don't care about that either. It's advertisements. These are companies. This is capitalism. They're trying to sell their products. Like,
yeah,
is
but
this
again,
really
like,
bad? What is bad?
Sexualizing a hottie like Michael B. Jordan, who can do whatever he wants to me, by the way. Sexualizing Same. Somebody like that Same. Is not that using the same language that the eugenics professors that have powered white supremacy and fucking skull measuring are into. Like, this
we're never going to win an election again. This is what this rant is like empowering JD Vance. Your rant might as well be a pro JD Vance ad, so that in 2028 he can go out there and be like, the fucking woke libs don't even want you to like Sydney Sweeney. Talking about how she's hot is eugenics now.
If we're talking good genes, I'm not going to get too far into this, but look no further than Usha Vance. Usha Vance has good genes. Oh, really good my genes. God. What a fucking
JD
stunning
Vance's
woman.
JD Vance's genes do not.
He doesn't deserve a second with. Although, you know what? Frankly, I have no sympathy for her at this point. Maybe. Nor do I have any sympathy for Melania, because they've made their decisions and they've made their choices and they have agent. Oh, are you? You're a Melania stan?
Oh, no. I fucking hate Melania. She's the worst. I was just sighing over that. That we're still on the genes.
Okay, actually, we do have another subject that we need to hit. I was about to say change the subject, but we do have one. You sent me a tweet from Amanda Littman, who's friend of the show, at least through me. Do you know Amanda?
Dude, me and Amanda go back to when you were in fucking short pants.
Dude. Oh, really? Yeah. I'm friends with Amanda through the imaginary best friend of FY Pod, Mr. Teddy Goff. Tweet that says, a lot of folks commenting on shift of younger men to the right, but it's young women who are also a huge story. Gen Z men are basically in line with Gen X men on party affiliation.
The worst generation.
Gen Z women are 11 points more Dem than Gen X women. So Gen Z women are doing sort of a reverse Gen Z men here. Those with good and with bad genes, although I don't know what bad genes are.
I could tell you. Have you seen Stephen Miller?
You think he's got bad genes?
I mean, look at his fucking, I mean, I'm not really into physiognomy. I don't even know how to say that word. That's what the white nationalists tweet about. I don't know. The white nationalists tweet a lot about when, instead of calling somebody ugly or fugly, which is what I like to call them as fugly, the white nationalists say that they have bad physiognomy. It's like P-H-Y-S. I don't know. I can't spell it off the top of my head. I-G-O-N-O-N-M-Y maybe. And it's like, this is actual eugenics. It's like there's certain head face shapes that signal low IQ. Anyway, Stephen Miller has it. It's kind of like he who smelt it dealt it for physiognomy with Stephen Miller a little bit.
Well, that makes sense. And yeah, it is weird hearing Stephen Miller talk about the supremacy of anybody when he is supremely a cuck. It's interesting for me to see this Gen Z women thing, especially as the emergence of tradwife culture seems to be chugging along with women like Brett Cooper, who can absolutely hit me up, by the way. Brett Cooper is very hot. Or she's just incredible at taking pictures and videos. Depends. You know, some people don't translate as well in person. But we see this emergence of tradwife culture. How often do you see this stuff? Because I see it pretty frequently.
I mean, I don't have it a lot in my feeds. And I think this is what interesting. A lot of people want to talk about it. Like it's very much a Gen Z phenomenon. Like the greatest generation, the millennials, we did not have a lot of this. Like tradwife. Like there was like, we had a little bit of a cottage core moment, which was like liberal coded, which was like libs wanting to move to the Hudson Valley and wear flannel. And like get back in touch with the earth a little bit. But that was like a kind of a left coded thing. Now the Gen Zs are into this, like women should be in the kitchen and move back to the farms. I mean, obviously not that many of them, since Gen Z women are far more liberal than Gen X women, as the stats show. But like that minority is very into that subculture. And so I only see it like when I'm actively searching it out. Like when I go to TPUSA events, you see this a lot. Like this is like text, not subtext, of the conversation at TPUSA things. I watched some Brett Cooper, just kind of get a sense for what kind of the cultural right is talking about from time to time.
Yeah, that's why I've watched Brett Cooper.
Cooper as well, yeah.
Because homework. Research.
Homework, yeah. So anyway, but I'm interested in your take. Like this stuff, though, like it seems to me like pops up into kind of your feeds and your, you know, naturally, or conversations naturally, or is that not right?
I think it's the type of thing that's taken different forms over time. Like from what I've observed, I think tradwife culture started to emerge in the 80s, because that's when you saw women in the workplace becoming a much more common thing. And therefore, the women who were making a point to not embrace that cultural shift were trying to make that point emphatically. So I do think tradwife culture probably does have roots that can be traced back to the 80s and to the, you know, earliest phases of women in the workplace having any sort of positions that were beyond just secretary being a thing. But as for the current iteration of tradwife culture, you know, we've talked about this before. I think so much of it involves the financial insecurity that our generation is facing, and the idea that if we pair up and get, you know, shacked up early, we can be part of this sort of team. And liberalism encourages women to take more ownership over their futures and their lives and put them in financial positions where they don't have to be trapped in marriages because they don't have the career mobility to get away from their shithole husband. But I think the primary contributing factor to this thing that women find interesting with quote unquote trad wives is the fact that we are entering an economy that is unstable, where these extremely high percentages of Gen Z people are not able to find anything in the workplace. There's obviously some more to it. I think that the anti-feminist wave that we've faced since Me Too, which I think is largely powered by a resentment that a lot of men hold towards Me Too for framing us as aggressors, when a lot of men have said like, well, I've never raped anybody, so why do I have to be careful about the way that I approach women in clubs? And suddenly men aren't approaching women as much anymore. And it's a complicated thing. And
there's Me Too was obviously good and I was supportive of it and actually did some work with some Me Too victims, did some PR stuff. But like, there also has just objectively been a backlash. And I talked to Ta-Nehisi Coates about this, about kind of the woke stuff. Like, there was positive progress made, but like, you just have to live in a reality like that a backlash was driving this, which is like why I think the stuff was not happening in my era and is happening now with this younger group that came of age during the Me Too stuff.
Men are not walking up to and approaching women anymore. And I've had some stuff, I've probably talked about this on the show before, but I've had some stuff where I've definitely noticed Me Too follow me into places like the bedroom, where I've been kind of happy about it because I was around 15 years old when, I mean, Me Too was started by a black woman in like 2007, but when white woman Me Too became as popular as it was around 2016, I was a teenager. So I was just starting to kiss. 15 was when I started to fuck, which is pretty cool. So right around then I started to see this thing, and that put me in a position where I'm much quicker to be overcautious in private with specifically women. With men, it's a completely different story, but with women, I'm quicker to be overcautious than I am to jump the gun. And I think that that's been a good thing for me, because when I talk about asking women if you can kiss them, when I'm talking to guys about how to go in and kiss a woman, I always say, ask first. Don't ask in like a grovelly, like, can I kiss you way, but ask in a confident way where you aren't devaluing yourself by asking as if you're not good enough to do it. You are simply making sure she's all right with it. And I'll tell you why. I have a lot of lady friends. Women make up at least 50% of my friends. And I hear two things from them about asking if you can kiss. I hear, he asked if he can kiss me. That was so cringe and yuck, and I couldn't believe it. I wanted to vomit. And I've heard, he asked if he could kiss me. That was so gallant and chivalrous. And what I noticed was that when she's into him, it's gallant and chivalrous. And when she's not into him, it's cringe and ick. So what I say to my friends is, if you ask for the kiss, under almost no circumstances is the question going to change the answer. But what it can do is prevent you going in to kiss somebody who is either going to turn away and move away and put you in this awkward situation, or even worse, kiss you, but not because they want to.
Can I just say, I think it's great. It's fine advice, Cameron, but I don't know. Like, going in for a kiss and getting rejected is an important life experience for a young man. And I think it builds character. As long as you're not being creepy about it and then forcing the kiss on her, obviously that is bad and is not as bad character, and you should be reproached for that. But like, you know, taking a shot, taking a swing and getting rejected, nothing wrong with that.
Here's where we're going to fully become a men's podcast. I'm going to give some kissing women advice. Again, I'm not using this as men advice. That's a different story, but with women, ask if you can go for the kiss, but do it with the confidence of it's going to be a yes, because then it's kind of cool. Then it's like, oh, even though he knows he's all set, he's still making sure. There was a young woman that I was hanging out with, and we had like texted flirty stuff to each other, really flirty stuff. And I went and I said to her like, hey, by the way, we can kiss now, right? And she went, no. And let me tell you why. And I was like, well, thank God I asked. And then about 6 months later, we were hooking up like every day for like 3 weeks straight. So first of all, it's an investment in a positive relationship that is built on trust and respect. Because if you respect those types of boundaries, that lets them know that you are the type of person who is not going to take advantage of a situation where pressure can be applied. But also, it's like a nice thing to do. And it's a way to avoid a situation where you're making somebody feel uncomfortable. And that's like my biggest fear. And that goes back to what we started talking about, which is like, Me Too really, really put me in the position where I understand how important it is to make sure that you're not making somebody uncomfortable. And in terms of the bisexuality of it all, hooking up with dudes made me understand what it feels like. Not the way that a woman could, of course, but I know what it feels like to be intimidated and uncomfortable because of the man that you're in bed with. Men have made me feel pressured and uncomfortable and unsafe. And while I can't understand how a woman feels in that perspective, I do know that it's fucking scary. And if I fucking ask, it works literally every time except for the one that I described. So ask, gentlemen. That's Tim. Tim can't even give you advice. He's gay.
I can get some girls. I can give some advice and didn't ask. And got several no's and a yes. And then moved on to men. Could I wrap us up? I know it's quite a long soliloquy. I think people love the Kissing with Cameron podcast, and we should probably have a whole spinoff podcast dedicated just to your advice when it comes to intimacy. And if people want to have questions for him, they should email.
Yeah, we have Boomer Mailbag. What's the email for that?
BulwarkPodcast@TheBulwark.com. If they are a boomer that have questions about their love life, or if they're a zoomer that have questions about whether or not they should ask proposed loved one for permission before kissing.
Well, so the one sentence wrap up I have for that, just to bring it back to the OG topic, was like, I think that while financial insecurity is a big part of trad wife culture, I think a lot of it is that women sort of caught on to, and a lot of them agreed with, this resentment men had towards the larger Me Too movement, because misogyny would not be possible without the many women who help us make it happen. And Me Too was a big thing to turn the culture on that. And that is my truth.
I agree with that. I've got good news. I'm going to end us on good news. We'll do more on this, on Gen Z women and kind of this dichotomy between the trad wife movement and the fact that Gen Z women are going so far left. My one sentence summation is, we've got a lot of problems with young men. We being the anti-fascists, but I don't think this is going to actually work on the young women. And it's going to work on some, but at scale, I think that the trend of women moving more to the left is going to continue. So that's my political analysis. That's great news. This is a political show. It's called Kissing with Cameron, or FY Pod. We appreciate you guys sticking with us.
And everybody, go to the FY Pod channel for even more stuff, including videos with me and a woman that I kissed for 8 months. And get ready for this weekend's interview, which might be the strangest one we've had yet.
Exciting!